One, two, three, four. This, my dear friends, is the chofta. Do you want some more? Chofta, the weekly podcast with Haji Mike. Culture, music, politics, football, life. Songs tell the stories of our lives. Main reason why I'm doing this chofta playlist of mine in spoken and eventually written form. In the summer of 1981, finishing my third year at Essex University, I came home for the summer, and oh, what a summer it was. Punk rock music by this time had morphed into different kinds of things. Some called it new wave, a definition of post-punk. Whatever it was, to me it sounded like watered-down pop drivel with people wearing the most ridiculous clothes, outrageous hairdos, and makeup and mascara pasted all over their face like icing on a birthday cake. Music, like many things, moves in the opposite directions. The rawness and confrontational in-your-face attitude of punk became this pleasantly apolitical, synth-based melodic pop music with what I consider to be rather bland vocals sung by people who couldn't really sing. I also wasn't into new wave because my lifelong love for reggae had commenced. You see, jam music is not something you get in and out of like a fashion. Reggae, as Bob Marley said, when it hits you, you feel no pain. It's a music that stays with you for life. And I was getting more entrenched, more deep into dub music around this time. Anything and everything I could find, scouring through record shops and bargain basements. At university in the student union bar, I heard a very different sound, and several songs played over and over again each night. Even if I didn't like them, they kind of baited me. And at different times, I'd hum a whistle melody while walking across the campus late at night. The campus was made up of tower blocks, 13, 14 stories high. These tower blocks at night created a kind of wind tunnel. And walking across the campus at that time, there was such great acoustics when it wasn't stormy. In the silence of a still night, when you whistled, the sound delayed, bounced back, like it was coming out of a King Tubby echo chamber. This sometimes annoyed somebody on the 11th floor of a tower block who would shout out, "Stop effing whistling! It's 2 a.m. But you'd smile and walk on and carry on, maybe whistling a little bit quieter. Usually, it was one of those songs that I heard over and over again in the bar that night that I didn't really like, that I would repeat as a little melody, as a whistle. So when I started blowing those first few bars of that clangy, staccato-like guitar chord progression, "London Calling" by The Clash, my embryonic dub brain stopped me. By the end of that summer, I would see and live a very different understanding of this iconic song by The Clash. In 1981, we never stopped marching against apartheid, for equal rights and justice, against nuclear armaments, for justice for the 13 black youth killed in the New Cross fire, against the National Front, against police harassment, their racist practices and the sus laws, marching for our future. Marching, marching, marching. We was marching for our future because there were such high levels of unemployment. Being on the dole was, as UB40 sang, the 1 in 10. And if you lived in Northern Ireland at the time, it was 1 in 5. London felt like a tinderbox that summer, and when Brixton started kicking off, the police, media and government called it the Brixton Riots. People in Brixton called it an uprising. It was inevitable, and that weekend all the shops in our area, Walthamstow in northeast London, started boarding up. As a budding sociologist, I wanted to go to Brixton to see what was happening. Of course, you couldn't. The whole area was cordoned off. My dad, concerned with what I just told him, suggested I should go up north to work with my brother and sister-in-law in their fish and chip shop in the Chippy in Liverpool. I wasn't too enamoured by this at first. That militant sociologist in me wanted to suddenly go and see how that chorus by Joe Strummer was really working in real life. But London was burning, but I was heading up north. So I got that train to Liverpool Lime Street. And you know when you reach there, because it feels like a scene out of Peaky Blinders. I know that's Birmingham, but it's still up north. With those tunnels and the great northern industrial appearance and the mossy side of the tunnel walls glistening green and black with light and shade from sunlight to darkness as you go in and under bridges with all the water running down. Because Liverpool, well, it was raining. It always rains in Liverpool. Well, not always, but usually 2 out of 3 days. I like these trips up north because people were so welcoming. Scousers generally would talk to anyone and they liked to mimic the Cockney accent whenever I spoke. The Chippy was on a council estate in a place called Leeso, the other side of the Birkenhead Tunnel from Litherland, where we were staying. Scousers back then, and I think the same applies today, would always declare we're Scousers as something distinct from being British. There's a lot of reasons for this, but I think at the time in 1981, it was because the Scousers hated Thatcher with a venom, because Margaret Thatcher targeted the radical politics of the city council. Very much like Brixton the week before, the volcano was about to erupt in Liverpool. In my first night at the Chippy, it became clear I would be the potato machine operator. Sounds pretty good, but it wasn't. And also learn the formula of mushy peas, which was quite disgusting, even though I still eat them. So I was in the back room with these piles of potatoes, sacks of potatoes piled up high. Each one had to be opened, then they had to be washed, and had to be peeled in the machine, and then made into chips by the machine. It has nothing to do with customers, and you're in a back room. But the potato machine was where everybody started. So you lift up, empty, salt, wash, cut. And much later, I wrote a song about working in a Chippy. Chippy chopper cheng cheng, working in a Chippy. First job I do before I turn an MC. Peeling the badada, cue to the borta, and so on. The problem with this potato mission was I felt my arms extend by the end of the night. They felt elongated from picking up all those sacks of potatoes. The next day, though, there was this very strange vibe in the air. When we got to the chip shop, all day long I could hear the sound of pneumatic drills, which was weird because it was a Saturday. My brother simply said to me, "Shit's going down tonight. Keep your eyes open." I wasn't sure what he meant at first, but I did notice three things. The drilling was done to the wall of a local supermarket. A big hole was made in the side of it. And the supermarket was quickly emptied by mid-afternoon by people just looting everything. Then a lot of Scousers, who I was told were not from the area, came into the chip shop, and many of them had taken out their front false teeth. This was always a sign of trouble, because when there was trouble, people would take their teeth out, preparing for a fight, I guess. And also, every one of them bought 5 small bottles of soft drink. What are they doing with the bottles, I wondered. I naively asked the question. "Making Molotovs," my brother said. Helen, my sister-in-law, was smiling at everyone, but she could sense that something was about to happen. And as night fell, it truly did, with nearly everything in sight being petrol bombed, smashed and taken over, except for the chippy, which carried on working because the troops had to have some food, and the queue was going outside the shop and up the road. Cha-ching, cha-ching, the cash register would ring. As night wore on, people got more agitated. And by about 10 o'clock, two policemen, obviously outnumbered, eventually found refuge in the chippy. As soon as they came in, a lot of the rioters walked out and stood outside, looking very angry. That agitation turned to jeers. And at this point, my brother tells us all, "Bámense, Leon. We're going to clear out soon." The policeman, feeling more pressure, went into a corner of the chip shop. And my brother tells them that it's a good idea if they leave the shop. He asked them very politely. They were really, really nervous. And then he just told them, "Look, if you stay inside this chip shop, there'll be nothing left of it by morning." And it was the only place standing on the estate that hadn't been firebombed. They accepted his point of view and legged it up the street with a group of people chasing them. At this point, all the cash was taken out of the register. My sister-in-law closed the fryers and the machines. My brother tells us we're leaving through the back. I even think he left the lights on. The door was open wide. All the stock was in there, and we got out of there as quickly as we could. It felt like a war zone. Those calls from the clash came back to me as we sped through the estate. Dat, 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 dat. And it was me singing inside myself, "Liverpool's burning." We drove through the tunnel in a very roundabout way home. And the next day we went back to the chippy, and everything, trust me, was just the way we had left it, with the lights on. Not a single potato was missing. The shop window was intact. It was the only one, in fact, on Liso Estate that had not been smashed. Oh, the power of chip shops to scousers. My brother looked around at the scene, shocked more than me. It did feel like a miracle to him. And we both agreed, lucky the coppers left when they did. The next day, I was back on that train to London. It felt like the whole of England was burning during that time. Every town, small or large, had a riot. Everyone was simply saying we had enough. Some 40 years later, I'm trying to get my head around the song by The Clash as something to play acoustically. I don't like imitating other people's songs. It's a pointless exercise. I like adapting them. Strummer, though, was one of a kind. But as it's a song I lived through, it has a special tone to me. And in my effort to sing it out, that London is still everywhere. I don't imitate Strummer. It's a pointless exercise. He was one of a kind. But as I live through that song and relive it now, it has a special tone for me. And in my effort to sing out that London was burning, that town is still everywhere, every corner of the earth where something is brewing due to corruption, intransigence, pressure, violence from the state. And there will always be a London calling due to politicians who never listen to their people.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look to us, little mania has bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing except for the rain and the crunch of things. The ice age is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going in. Engines stop running, but I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning. I live by the river to the imitation zone. Forget it, brother, you can go it alone. London calling to the zombies of death. Quit holding out and draw another breath. London calling, and I don't wanna shout, but while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. London calling, see we ain't got no hide, except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The ice age is coming, the sun's zooming in. Engines stop running, the wheat is going thin. A nuclear error, but I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning. It was true. London calling at the top of the dial. And after all this, won't you give me a smile? London calling. I never felt so much alike.